Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 15.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 15, Episode 7. This season has flown so quickly, I genuinely cannot wrap my head around it. I can't believe after this episode, we only have 3 episodes left of season 15. And I'd like to thank each and every one of you for both A, providing the content for this season, which I think has been our best so far, and obviously for B, joining me each and every week and making that choice to spend some time suspending your disbelief. Now, the submitter of today's experience mentions that at the beginning of their email, that for their experience in particular, we really should leave our disbelief at the door. But in reality, when I've read through it, I think we've had a good few episodes where the amount of disbelief needed far exceeds what you're going to need today. And arguably, that's what makes today's episode, for me anyway, particularly terrifying. It's the fact I can envisage what the individual is going through, and I can see it taking place. There's a very short personal anecdote at the end which should explain why I can picture this so well. However, before we move on to today's true paranormal experience, we need to of course thank our wonderful team members over at Patreon. When you decide to become one of our Patreon members, not only do you receive each and every episode that's released on this main feed both ad-free and before everyone else, you can also gain access to our Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites. Dark Bites is released each and every Sunday of the year, without fail, even in between seasons, which means you never miss your dark paranormal fix. Plus, you can also gain access to the entire back catalogue of Dark Bites. That's over 70 hours of true paranormal experiences that have only ever been heard by our Patreons. But the best thing about our Patreon team is the community. We've built a wonderful team of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts over on Patreon. And we'd love to extend an exclusive invitation just for you. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Just like the following wonderful new team members have: Luke Irvin, Barbara Murphy, Matthias Van Enden, Lala Landy, Miguel Fernando, Rebecca, Toon, Snowflake, Anthony Pilcher, Denise Hughes, A, Rebecca Carter, Gail, Amy Giroux, Cassandra Stiles, Krista Parker, Mel Dingwall, Kylie Hughes, Dylan Jones-Roberts, Ian Morris, Ashley Hamlin, Brandon Barber, Nicola Young, Guerra82, Pedro Alvarado Sali, Hannah Joy, Beck Stone, Kissa Hargett, Johnny, and Miss Elizabeth Fisher. Thank you so much for supporting the show, guys. It genuinely means the world. So if you like the sound of early ad-free releases, including debuts and finales, and of course access to the Dark Bites back catalogue, maybe give yourself a cheeky little gift and head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable and of course, leave your disbelief at the door. As we hear all about our Dark Guardian. Today, I'm writing to you as not just a fan, but as someone who has unexpectedly become part of a story that I never wanted to. I've been looking for the right platform to share my experience and believe this is the place. And it's one I think might intrigue both you and your listeners. It's a tale that's both disturbed and puzzled me deeply, and continues to do so to this very day. I wish to remain anonymous, and I will have changed the names and locations mentioned in my experience. This isn't just a ghost story, or a tale of strange occurrences. It's an ongoing ordeal, and it's really tested my limit of understanding reality. I hope that by sharing this, I might find some insight, or at least hope that others may offer guidance, or maybe find resonance with their own experiences. Firstly, thank you for providing the platform that encourages openness without judgment. And you say to leave your disbelief at the door. Well, prepare yourself for what I'm about to recount. Because, previously anyway, if I'd have heard this, I would not have believed it. Until I experienced it. So the place where all of this went down was just a regular old high-rise apartment, right in the thick of Chicago. It's one of those big imposing-looking buildings, pretty stark-looking, almost like something from a dystopian movie, all concrete and shadows, but very beautiful in a way too. I moved in during the worst part of winter. You know when the wind is so cold it's like it's cutting right through you? And the days are more like a long stretch of evening. But I wasn't going in alone. I was moving in with my best friend, Alex. He's an artist and really into the odd and weird things in the world. He decided to join me as a roommate following a separation. This building was in a completely different part of town from where him and his ex used to live. Therefore, the chances he'd run into him were very small, to say the least. We were on the 12th floor, in a spot that, at first glance, seemed pretty cool, because we had amazing views, and the apartment itself had this amazing old-time charm. But not long after we moved in, it started to feel like the building, well, our apartment in particular, had a mind of its own. It felt like, and I know how weird this sounds, I don't know. It was just watching us. Waiting. Waiting for what? I've no idea. Our excitement about striking out on our own quickly got overshadowed by the vibe of the apartment. It was eerie. Like stepping into a story where the walls aren't just walls, but something more. From a spooky side of things, well, they started off small. The kind of stuff you brush off because, hey, it's an old building, right? It began with the lights. They'd flicker at the craziest or weirdest of times. No rhyme, no reason. We joked about it at first. We even said it was our own personal disco. But it wasn't long before our joking stopped. Because then we had the TV. A TV that we'd turn off, walk out the room, and bam, it was back on again. Blaring some static-filled channel, or creepier still, it would be playing old black-and-white movies that definitely were not in our streaming queue. But one night, we found it playing this ancient-looking cartoon in black-and-white that neither of us had ever seen or heard of. It was a cartoon horse, and swaying back and forth all around it were these hooded characters. There was no sound, but it was terrifying to say the least. I just walked over and pulled out the plug. But it wasn't just the electronics acting up. There was this constant feeling of being watched. You'd be in the shower or working at a desk, and you'd feel eyes on you. I told Alex, but I also said it could just be city living getting to me. But he said even he felt it. A gaze. Like someone was standing just out of sight. Well, that was the perfect description. And the fact he felt it too really freaked me out. And mirrors. Man, the mirrors were the worst part. You'd pass by and you would swear you'd see something move behind you. Not outright figures or anything. Just enough to make you whip your head around and check if someone else was in the room with you. And of course, there never was. So we began to start really questioning things when stuff began moving. Not big things, but little personal items. Like you'd put your keys down on the counter, and the next thing you knew, they'd be on the living room table. Or you'd find your book not on the shelf where you left it, Instead, it would be open on the floor of another room on some random page. As I say, Alex is an artist, and one day he found a sketchbook open on the kitchen table. There was a page he was staring at, confused, because it was filled with drawings that he didn't remember doing. There were these weird swirling patterns. The nearest thing I could place them to would be like cave carvings, but they seemed more ritualistic. This event really got to both of us. The sense that whatever was happening wasn't just weird electrical faults, or our minds playing tricks. We tried coming up with every possible logical explanation. Maybe the wiring was bad. Maybe we even had a mischievous neighbour messing around with us. But we knew deep down something else was going on. Something off. The feeling in the apartment grew heavier. There would be a chill that would settle in mid-air. You could literally stand up and feel it, or reach your hand up and feel it. It wasn't a breeze. It was a solid, cold patch. It was literally a different environment just above your head. We were forever looking over our shoulder. As these events picked up pace, nighttime became the hardest. The apartment felt different then. It seemed charged with a palpable tension, and it was impossible to sleep. There would be knockings I would hear coming from Alex's room. I'd burst in, demanding to know what he was doing, and he'd be fast asleep. On other occasions, he would come running into my room, asking why I was scratching at the walls, but I didn't hear a thing. Then one night, I too heard the scratching, again coming from Alex's wall, but this time, I knew better than to believe it was Alex. No, this was whatever was in our apartment. I genuinely think now it's because we acted so blasé about things like items moving or the TV that it decided it needed to know it had been recognised. There would always be whispering of a night also, and it was hard to tell if it was coming from walls or from the vents, or maybe from the window. But remember, we were 12 stories up, and whatever words these whispers were, they were indecipherable. Despite our growing unease, we tried to keep it light. We had to live here. So we made jokes about our ghostly roommate. But as the days went on, it was harder to laugh these things off. The apartment seemed to be closing in around us. And those initial incidents, once just curious anomalies, began to feel like the opening moves of a much darker thing. Just when we started to think things couldn't get any weirder, they did. Big time. It started with the whispers turning into voices. At first, it was just gibberish, like a bad radio signal. But then it began to make sense, in a really disturbing way. We'd catch snippets of sentences, stuff about secrets, things about something we couldn't quite make out being hidden in the walls. And Alex heard specifically one line that said, "Darkness waiting beneath us." It genuinely felt like we were tuning into some sinister broadcast that didn't want to be understood. One evening, Alex was staying in my room. This had kind of become the norm, given the nightly bangings and scratchings. And that night, the shadows started behaving strangely. They stretched and twisted in ways that didn't make any sense with the light sources in the room. Alex pointed out how they seemed to linger longer than they should, clinging to corners, moving subtly, as if they were sticky, alive. They were also very faint, as if you didn't concentrate on them, you'd miss them completely. Then things got really intense, really quick. We started seeing the shadows move independently. I'm talking about fully formed dark figures darting quickly just at the edge of our vision. You'd turn to look straight at them and they'd vanish. But the feeling that something had just been there was undeniable. It's genuinely hard to describe. It was even harder to shake off the constant dread that filled the apartment. The activity only ramped up from there. Objects now didn't just move, they flew. Books would slam shut. Glasses would shatter against the wall as if hurled by an unseen force. One night, a picture frame lifted from the table and smashed against the floor right in front of us. It was like the apartment was turning against us. Its once spooky but ultimately safe walls now seemed like a playground for something much more malevolent. Alex's sketches began to change too. He'd wake up to find he'd drawn eerie, detailed pictures in his sleep. Scenes of twisted rituals and figures. Figures with too many limbs. Surrounded by symbols that neither of us recognized, but we both agreed felt ominously familiar. He said he didn't remember any of it, and the fear in his eyes told me he wasn't messing around. Let's have a quick break to talk to you about Policy Genius. Now, we all like to put off life insurance talk because it reminds us of our mortality. But life insurance isn't about death, it's about life. It's about ensuring the lives of those you love remain secure and comfortable. And I'm sure many of you will think, well, I'm covered through work or I'm covered through my bank account. But believe me, you want to check those finer details because you may be surprised what you're actually covered for. And this is exactly where Policy Genius come into their own. Yes, we could talk about how Policy Genius is America's leading online insurance marketplace or how their award-winning agents will walk you step by step through the entire process. But the best thing about Policy Genius for me is they don't have a dog in the fight. They're not going to strong-arm you towards one company or another. They've no incentive to do so. Their only incentive is to listen to your needs, scour America's top companies, and find you the best price. For example, with Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that begin at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options even offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. There's a reason why Policy Genius has thousands of five-star reviews on Google and Trustpilot, and you'll find out what it is when you tick life insurance off your to-do list with Policy Genius. So head over to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you can save. That's policygenius.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The worst part came with the apparitions. We saw them clearly now, not just in our periphery. These weren't human. They were distortions, echoes of something maybe once human, perhaps twisted by whatever darkness had seeped into them. I can only imagine from the building itself. They'd appear in hallways, at the foot of our beds, watching, waiting. Their forms would flicker like static, as if struggling to fully manifest in our world. One night, we heard a loud crash from the kitchen. We ran in to find every cabinet open, every dish thrown to the ground. Yet the air was still, too still. And there, on the condensation-filled window from the washer-dryer, was a message. Just two words, written in the condensation: let in. Well, we were officially past the point of excuses now. It was clear there was something deeply, deeply wrong with this place. Something angry, maybe something ancient. Whatever it was clearly getting stronger, getting more daring with each passing night. This home was no longer ours. It had become a domain where these things ruled, where the past whispered into our ears, literally. As things went on, Alex and I knew we couldn't just ignore this. It was one thing to joke about a ghostly roommate, but it was another to live in constant fear. Determined to find out some truth behind these things, we decided to confront the one man we thought might know something. The building's caretaker, a man named Mr. Jennings, who, he informed us, had been looking after the place for more years than he cared to remember. Mr. Jennings seemed a bit of a recluse, giving brief nods but rarely engaging in any conversation. One evening, we caught him in the dimly lit basement, organising old papers. "Mr. Jennings," Alex started, his voice echoing slightly in the concrete expanse, "we need to talk to you about the apartment." The old man had his back to us, and he paused, and finally he turned around. "I thought you might," he nodded. He invited us into his cramped office, a small room stuffed with filing cabinets and old janitorial equipment. Once the door was shut, he began to speak, his words slow and measured. "This building right here, it's old. It's seen a lot of folk come and go. It's seen, I've seen, things that don't make much sense, if you know what I mean." Mr. Jennings then walked over to a desk. He opened the bottom drawer and pulled out an old brown book. "This was left behind by one of the residents. I think it was late 80s. He was into all sorts of weird things. Proper creepy stuff." Mr. Jennings flipped the book open to a page. A paperclip held a yellowed newspaper clipping, and it was an article about a series of unexplained incidents in the building, dating back decades. Noises, shadows, the same things we were experiencing. "The man who lived in your apartment," said Mr. Jennings, tapping the book, "he was part of something, some kind of group. They thought..." He paused, leant in, looked around like someone might be listening. "Well, they thought this building was special. Something to do with ley lines or energy lines or something. A crossroads of mystical energy or some nonsense." He scoffed, but I noticed his hands trembled slightly as they rested on the book. "They'd hold meetings, chanting and things you'd hear, right there in your living room. And one day he disappeared, just vanished. It was the next tenant who started to report disturbances. Folks in the building then said the apartment was cursed, haunted. But no one really took it seriously." Alex and I exchanged glances, the implications dawning on us. The hauntings weren't just some random thing. They were apparently connected to some weird history, a legacy of rituals and mysteries wrapped up into the fabric of the building, and apparently concentrated in our apartment. We left Mr. Jennings knowing the origins of the disturbances, but that just made them more real, more urgent. Whatever had been stirred up, be it by us or someone else, in that apartment, had not only woken up with our arrival, but now it seemed it was both awake and aware of us. This newfound knowledge about our apartment's dark past only intensified the spectral activities. It seemed that by uncovering the history, we'd somehow emboldened the entities, as if our awareness of them gave them permission to manifest more freely, more fiercely. It all came to head one cliched stormy night. The city was on the edge of a tempest, the kind that turns the sky a deep, ominous grey and makes these high-rise buildings groan under the weight of the wind. Inside, our apartment felt like the epicentre of the outside storm. The air was not only thick, but seemed charged with a palpable sense of doom. As the first drops of rain began to tap against the windows, the apartment plunged into darkness. Great, a power outage. The power outage was abrupt, and the silence that followed was deafening. Except for the rain. And then the whispers. But they were no longer whispers. They were more like growl speech. Some clear, some loud, demanding. Some pitiful, vague, almost teary. Every rasp echoing through the room with a resonance that chilled us to the very bone. Like some bad horror film, the only light that would come into the room would be from the occasional lightning bolt. Alex and I huddled together in the living room, and we watched in horror as the shadows began to coalesce. First into formless masses, 5, maybe 6 of them. Then they formed into distinctly human shapes, and they focused on us. But they walked sideways around the room, like they were holding hands, but they weren't. Faster and faster, creating a vortex of dark energy that made you feel like it was some sort of bizarre magnet pulling at your very soul to join them. And then, amidst the chaos, behind them, a much larger, totally black void began to swirl under the window. It grew larger and larger, and from that void, behind the still rotating shadows, a figure began to form. A figure that was at once both ghastly and mesmerizing. It was taller than any normal man, and its body twisted in unnatural angles, like it was unfolding. Then its eyes appeared, first as a very low amber, and they slowly turned into a fierce red. Even in this dim light, its presence was overwhelming, suffocating. The circling shadow people were almost a second thought now, as we were trying to deal with seeing this literally devilish counter-worry. Its mouth opened and started moving. It began mumbling words and then the word guardian. But these words didn't come from this thing. They came from Alex to my right. I turned, and his pupils were dilated to total black circles, staring straight ahead. More mumbling than the word incomplete. Mumble, mumble, beyond. Alex! I whispered loudly, squeezing his hand. The figure moved closer. The temperature dropped so drastically that our breaths became visible in the air. More mumbling from Alex, and then circle. It demanded, via the now rocking Alex. More mumbling, then suffer. Frozen with fear, I watched helplessly as the figure extended what could only be described as its hand. and it pointed directly at Alex's sketchbook, which had been left open on the page filled with those ritualistic symbols that Alex had been drawing over and over. The room suddenly illuminated. The power surged back on. It flooded the apartment with light, and the figures, the guardian, all vanished instantly. Alex looked confused, and then he looked at me, and still with the black eyes, he said, "They're stuck. We help or we suffer, like Peter, like James, like Andrew." He then fell back. His eyes rolled in the back of his head, and he had a full-on seizure. I dialed 911, and Alex was taken to hospital. They said it was an epileptic fit, but he was in his late 20s, and he didn't have epilepsy. When he came to, he said he remembered huddling after hearing whispers and nothing else. We spent the rest of the evening in the hospital, too afraid to speak much, and I wasn't going home alone. The next day, when he was discharged, we went home, and I explained to the clearly shocked Alex what had actually taken place. In the reassuring sunlight that now lit the apartment, we made a decision that we had to try something. Despite the sunlight, it felt like having a nightmare, and then finding the nightmare had followed us into reality. The apartment was eerily quiet, as though the building itself was holding its breath, waiting to see what our next move would be. Alex and I moved throughout the apartment like ghosts, our movements slow and deliberate, our conversations hushed and tense. The decision to somehow undo what had been done weighed heavily on us. But we knew that ignorance was no longer an option, and neither was living in fear. We needed to act. But we knew nothing about this. Firstly, we decided we should get rid of anything that connected us to the rituals that had apparently forced this guardian into our space. So basically, any of Alex's sketches where he'd drawn these symbols, anything that this thing had thrown or broken, we took it all up to the roof of the building, we found an old oil drum, and we set it all on fire. Watching as the flames consumed these symbols, we felt a mix of both relief and apprehension. Had we done enough? Had we even done the right thing? In the days and weeks that followed, we sought out experts, parapsychologists, a medium, even a priest. Each offered their own form of cleansing or blessing, filling the apartment with sage, smoke, holy waters, prayer. But while the intensity of the manifestations decreased, the presence never fully left. Shadows still flickered at the edge of our vision, and the cold spots would occasionally reappear. The psychological toll was immense. Sleep basically became a non-event, filled with nightmares if and when it did come. We were jumping at every sound, every shift in the air. Our conversations were dominated by what we'd experienced, each of us trying to process the fear and the fascination with what we'd uncovered. But the apartment no longer felt like a home. It was a battleground between the seen and the unseen. After several weeks of strained cohabitation with the remnants of the paranormal activity, we both made the difficult decision to move out. Leaving felt both like a defeat, but also a liberation. As we packed our belongings, I couldn't help but feel the eyes of that guardian on us, watching us retreat, its purpose unfulfilled, or fulfilled, who the hell knows. But the impact of those weeks lingered long after we moved. Alex and I are still best friends, but things are not quite the same. He's thrown himself into his art, but his work has become more darker, more abstract. like he's trying to exorcise his demons through his canvases. And I found myself drawn to study the occult, not out of belief, but in a quest to understand, to maybe find answers to the questions that apartment threw at us. We both moved on, but the shadow of the guardian has followed us in different ways. Alex has told me he's had disturbances in his new studio, fleeting but palpable. I've experienced an unshakable sense of being watched, especially at night. A sensation that drove me to insomnia and a fear of the dark that I've never had before. The sense of being watched never fully dissipated. It's clung to the edges of my vision, a presence just out of sight. I'm forever looking over my shoulder, flinching at shadows. This psychological residue is like a stain I can't wash out. You see, we were unwillingly thrown into a world that most people deny even exists. I was once one of those people, but not anymore. Many thanks, Anonymous. Well, thank you so much, Anonymous, for your submission for this episode of Season 15. This guardian figure, this elusive man from the 80s, it sounds like something I need more information on. And I know we've had some back and forth correspondence, but I've just sent you an email, and if you could, please answer what I've asked within that mail. And if the individual does, who knows, we may have a follow-up on this particular episode. Don't forget, we never close our submissions for experiences for the dark paranormal. And although the experiences for Season 16 are more or less nailed down, we always have the opportunity to move things around should the right experience come through. So you can send an experience of any length through to contact at thedarkparanormal.com. Now, I did say that this episode would end with a short anecdote, which is personal to me, which is kind of relevant to today's experience. And basically, it was my sister who was aged 14. I may have mentioned this before, in fact. But she, out of nowhere, spun her head round on the couch once and said, "Get him away from me, get him away from me," and then proceeded to have an epileptic fit. My mother, who didn't know any better because my sister didn't have epilepsy, didn't want her to swallow her tongue. So she used her finger to try and scoop her tongue out. And my sister, mid-seizure, bit down and almost severed my mother's finger, blood splurting up the wall. I was on an adjacent chair and I watched as she turned her head, looked at something, and repeatedly said, "Get him away from me, get him away from me," before going into seizure. And of course, there was no one there. The ambulance arrived and they took her to hospital. She had a few tests carried out, and they declared late onset epilepsy, given she'd never had any seizures before. And she's never had another one since, to this very day. And that was over 20 years ago. So who knows, maybe it was something just purely medical. But one thing that's certainly true is just how terrifying a scene that was played out. And that was without a giant shadowy entity in the middle of a blackout. So I can only imagine the fear that you went through. As ever, thank you for choosing to spend your time with me on your show, The Dark Paranormal. I'll speak to you all through the week for another dark minisode, and of course I'll speak to you again on Friday for episode 8 of season 15. For our Patreons, I'll next speak to you on Sunday for another installment of Dark Bites. But until next time, take care, and remember, whenever you're discussing the paranormal, try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.